this meeting to order. I'm State Representative Mary Franson, and the chair of the Select Committee on Affordable Childcare. And I want to thank each and every one of you for being here today, taking time out of your busy schedule to be here on a cold Tuesday. But at least it's not freezing like it has been, you know. Mm-hmm. I feel that spring is right around the corner, and pretty soon your kids will be able to be outside without playing in mud and getting them all bundled up in snow pants and suits and boots and hats and where's my mittens. So this is not a formal meeting, but it is a listening session, and with that listening session, I'm not even making my own rules. Which is, this is not going to project any noise, but it is a recording device, and we are recording this hearing for the record, this listening session. And before we start, I am just going to, we'll start from Representative Kreisha over there. He's going to introduce himself, and we're just going to go down the line so you get a good sense of who we are and where we represent. Oh, by the way, I represent District 8B, which is Alexandria, the northeastern part of Douglas County in the eastern half of Otter Tail County. So Representative Kreisha, if you'd like to start out.
Thank you. So I'm Representative Ron Kreisha, and I serve the Little Falls District, District 9B, in between St. Cloud and Brainerd, if you're not familiar with Little Falls.
I'm Peggy Bennett. I'm representative for 27A, which is down Fribourg County and some of the surrounding areas.
Hi, my name is Tiana Tice. I represent District 14A, which is the west and south part of St. Cloud, St. Augusta, and White Park.
I'm Representative John Petersburg from 24A, which is just south of here, almost down in Waseca District.
Brian Daniels. I represent Rice and Dodge and a little bit of Steele County, and I have not done this before, so we're learning together here.
Representative Dave Pinto of District 64B, which is portions of St. Paul, and thanks very much for being here.
I'm Jerry Kruger, I'm a legislator. I'm here representing the Department of Human Services. I'm the Inspector General for the department, which means that I'm over the licensing area, the background study area, and the trauma education area. I just want to say thank you for coming up with very interesting questions.
And you know, I was just noticing, ladies, I almost wore striped shirts just like yours today, which I'm very glad to set for the polka dots.
Get the memo.
Okay, so back to the topic at hand. I am a former licensed child care provider. I did licensed child care from about June-ish of 2006 until October-ish of 2010, and then I won my election in that November of 2010, and so here we are. I do have somebody in the legislature that has experience as a home-based licensed child care. My motto, or my licensed business name, was Mary Little Lambs, M-E-R-R-Y, because play on my name, of course, right? And I had a motto, we practice kindness, and that's exactly how I expect our committee to treat each other. This is a bipartisan committee. And although Representative Pinto is only our one and only Democrat here tonight, but we are super excited that he is here because it is important to have both sides of the aisle represented. And there's actually more Democrats that are part of the committee, but due to conflicts, they're unable to be here. But we can all agree that Minnesota has many top quality child care providers who offer a safe, high quality environment for children to grow, learn, thrive. In fact, we're rated as having the number 10th highest quality child care in the nation. But right now in the state of Minnesota, our weakest link is our child care industry. And if we want Minnesota to be a strong economic force in this nation, and we want our businesses to survive, and we want them to thrive, and we want our economy to grow, it starts with child care providers. And right now, we are seeing that there is a decrease in providers across the state, which is creating quite a burden on our families. It is creating a burden also on our job providers. And so we want to hear from you, the parents, providers, and the public, to gain valuable insight about what's happening to the industry, what can we do on a state level to make your business better, what can we do to make better informed decisions in St. Paul, because we do care. We are wanting to listen to you. We've all got our listening ears on. And we are going to take charge of this issue. And so it is my goal as chair to work with both sides of the aisle, because this is a issue that transcends party lines, and it is important to all of us. Children are not partisan at all. We teach our children and in our childcare and at home to treat each other with kindness, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. And we amplify those characteristics here with the Select Committee on Affordable Childcare. And so with that, I also just got to give a shout out to my son Colin, who is not here, but he turned 9 today. And I hardly ever get to spend his birthday at home because I'm working. So, but I always like to say happy birthday to my son Colin. Okay, so we've got two testifiers lined up, and I know we're going to have more than that, but if we could just, if somebody, the first testifier wants to pull a chair up here, and there is a, Jerry, that is very kind of you, thank you. So if you just want to, you know, maybe pull two chairs up, because then, Jerry, the next person can kind of just like sit in line. And then there's a microphone there that I'm going to ask that you take the microphone. And when you take the microphone, state your name and where you live and what your occupation is. If you're a licensed family child care provider, if you run a center, if you work for the county as a licensor, perhaps you work for a community action group. We would like to know that for the record, and just so that the public has an opportunity to see exactly whereabouts in the realm of early childhood education and child care you fit in. And so with that, we will begin. I've got, looks like Karen Hoffman is the first person on the list. Karen, you're up on the affordable child care listening session.
So my name is Karen Hoffman.
And just speak up a little bit, Karen.
I do trainings for parents aware, to training providers. I do a lot in community for child care. So I've been doing child care center days since 1980. I'm a law city director because the average life of the director is 4 years. So we've seen things come and go and a lot in Rice County. We have a lot of issues that are really major. Our center has worked very well to become parent care rated. We are now an early head start collecting and early head start cooperation, so we work very hard for training. Trainings are very expensive. It's hard for providers to get that, and same thing in the provider field. We have salaries that home providers and center-based providers make in rural Minnesota are lousy. They could not afford to live on what they make. Because there's no additional funding that's coming in from the state in any way, shape, or form, it makes it difficult as a provider to be able to say, oh, I'm going to give you a raise of $2 an hour so you can do the trainings. So that's tough. Our parents, our center is global lessons for 8 children, and we're full. And we get calls probably 2 to 3 a week. People who can't find care for all ages across the spectrum. They have a very hard time with all the paperwork that social services requires for child care assistance, especially those parents who are English as a second language families. There's nobody there to help them do that. They'll give the paperwork and say, go fill this out and bring it back. Even if it's in their native language, it's very, very difficult for them to say, I don't get my employer to get those 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 1 week pay stubs in. I might be able to fill out my part, but then there's other pieces that need to be there and there's nobody there to help them. I should not be the person helping them fill out the applications. And I am, because there's not anything there available for them. We got, fortunately right now, for example, we don't have a waiting list for childcare assistance, but we have certainly had waiting lists in the past. And we've had parents who have had to not take jobs, who have lost jobs because they can't afford to be to work and pay their childcare out of that. So that becomes a really big issue, I think, for families. And then the reimbursement rates that we as providers get from childcare assistance really doesn't even cover what we charge parents, certainly not covering the cost of care. So, and there has been, we took a huge hit, and it's never built back up to where it was when the legislature cut us back a few years ago. So our cost of care is certainly less than what I know the city's cost of care is, but still parents can't afford to do that. So it becomes really difficult. The training becomes difficult. People say, why don't we do it? And we've got a lot of families that we really love and a lot of kids that we really take care of really well. And that's why we do it. It's not like painting a house. When you paint it and you say, look what I did. We have to wait 18 years sometimes to find out what we've done. So we do it because we love it. I don't know of any of the providers that I train, that I talk to, that I meet with, who are in it for the money. It's just not, I tell people if you're going in it for the money, don't go in it, because it's not where the money is. It's not stable for parents. Parents cannot find enough care. I can only get so big. If you're in your home, you can only get so big. We've had one center closed in the last couple of years. We saw the map where the reduction in family child care has been there. Some of that may be because of the new training requirements. Some of it is because my kid is not in the school, has been done. Some of it is just that people work with too much. So it really is, there's tons of factors that go into that. But bottom line is we need more support from the state to be able to provide the kind of care that we want to provide.
Thank you. Next up, we have Rebecca Sadarsky.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. Good evening. My name is Rebecca Sadarsky, and I work for the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs. And I want to bring a little bit of the perspective of the Latino community to the conversation. So it's a complex situation, and multiple factors are associated with gaps in economic instability for our Latino Minnesotans. I organized a packet for you all, and one of the key factors is affordable child care for Latino families and other families living at or just above the poverty level in southern Minnesota, in the southern Minnesota region. Our Latino Minnesotans face various barriers common to other minority ethnic groups, like transportation, language limitations, geographic mobility, and educational attainment. So for Latino Minnesotans, at least a third of them live in the southern Minnesota region. So they've accounted for most of the growth and economic contributions to the region during the past 5 to 10 years. Despite common beliefs, those who call southern Minnesota region home are not at all, or even the majority, undocumented workers. And some of the maps that I presented you show undocumented workers, but they're not all undocumented workers. It's a gray area that you can find on the map. So we created these packets to provide you some context to this discussion about who are Latino Minnesotans. For Rice County, in the map you will see, you will note in the profile maps of Latinos, that are the gray areas. They were non-citizens. But those, I just wanted to make sure that it was clear that this is not undocumented Latinos, but rather it's a new group of legal residents, visa holders, and those who are undocumented. So I just wanted to make sure that you knew that. During a meeting held actually this afternoon at the Capitol with the Committee on Affordable Child Care, the director of the Office on the Economic Status of Women reported that in her travels during 2014 and 2015, a common theme among concerns expressed by rural Minnesotans was affordable child care. So, our recommendation, the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs recommends that this committee fix affordable care options and not just accessible child care at the forefront of the discussion and vital solutions. A large portion of rural Latino Minnesotans live below at or just above the poverty rate in Minnesota. So just bring it to your consideration.
Thank you, Rebecca. When you say the word affordable, and the word affordable gets thrown around a lot in every situation, doesn't just necessarily mean child care. It can be housing, it can be college tuition. So in your opinion, Rebecca, could you please further define the word affordable?
Well, it is accessible to their level of income, pretty much. In my work in southern Minnesota, if a family cannot afford childcare, we'll ask a friend and we'll pay a very minimal hourly, whatever they can afford, for the child to be watched. It is not necessarily the best situations because mom would just, that other person would just put him in front of the TV and they're just trying to make buy. And it's not probably the best place for that child to be in, and it's not going to get the access that the best child care that would need in a center or in a bigger center for that child. So, but many of them can't even afford it. It's not even in the radar to think about putting that child in that environment. They suffer from it. It's just something that is affordable that they, at the level that they're at, that they will be able to afford that.
Thank you. No? Who would like to come up next? We have a licensor from Rice County. Did she want to come up and, or she's just here to listen? Just to listen? Okay, you want to go ahead, come on up. And then state your name and such for the record.
Take my name for the record? Yeah. My name is Bill Unisapora. I'm a licensed doctor for Tyler and Swift County, and I have been licensed for, my baby's going to be 31. Started 2 years pregnant when she was 6 months old. So I've been taking a lot of children, and it's only been the last couple of years where I've really felt frustrated and really not supported in what I do by the county. I don't want to get in any trouble, but even by our county, and where you can't get answers to the questions you need.
And Philomena, you're not alone in this.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I have noticed a lot of my friends that have quit in the last year. One of the big things is, and I know everyone wants to hear it, the union. There are a lot of people that say, I don't even want to go there. I don't get to vote. That's shameful that all providers, licensed health providers, do not get to vote on this. And I had two people representing the union come to my home, and both of them were not truthful to me. And that is very upsetting to me. So there is no way anybody can show me that these people that weren't truthful to me then and in my own home are going to be tomorrow or any other day. So it's really upsetting that I'm an independent businesswoman who runs a business 12 hours a day, 13 hours a day,
4 hours of cleaning, getting ready for curriculum, scrubbing toilets, buying supplies, doing everything for my business, that somebody's now going to say that I need to be unionized. No other business does the business owner, our business owner, a part of the union. So it's really upsetting to me. And most providers, they come to the door and they just don't know what to do because they don't know what the truth is. And they sign these postcards that are then used wrongly for them. That's very upsetting. That's one of the reasons that the excess amount of paperwork now. I printed out and did 68 or 69 pieces of paperwork before my licensor came to my office. There's got to be easier ways. Can't we be online and the piece of paper that I filled out for 25 years that says that my knives are here, my first aid kit is here, that can't be online that we can just go in and say, correct this at this date. Versus, I probably spent 36 hours getting ready for my licensing. And a lot of it was filling out paperwork that they already have, that it hasn't changed in 25 years. You want to stop over, I'll show you. One of the things that I think would be very valuable, and I know that Governor March wants through school down to 4-year-olds, why not give daycare providers access to free curriculum for the children so we can do it in a home setting and centers? We have already a thing in place that's canine online learning. Why not do through school online learning? Where we have access to that where it's then affordable. Why add more already taxed system that we have? We don't have enough space in our schools. Most schools don't. Also, now that we have all day kindergarten in Owatonna, I have empty spots that I can't fill because I have no kindergartners in the school. So why aren't we looking at changing to make more room for children because we don't have enough places in daycare homes for children? Let's change the rules so we can have fill those spots with preschoolers. Training is expensive, it's not nearby. Also, just finding the right kind of curriculum. I go all the way to DHS's website to get the answer that I needed and dig through it and find it because it wasn't accessible to me in my company. We shouldn't have to go through that. And also, I have 5 grandchildren, one on the way. And so as my children have their children in daycare. And a couple of things that we discussed with them was, why not do more? There's a tax credit, I think, for working parents. And is it, I don't know if it's for one child, but if you have 3 children, it's the same amount. Let's increase that to help our families that choose to have more than one child. Pre-tax money for children, is it $5,000 max per year? Why not $5,000 per kid? I know my somebody that's paying $30,000 in childcare for their 3 children. Why isn't there more of a pre-tax money for them to help them out? Not give them a handout, but just help out. That's all I wrote down
on this one. Well, Philomena, there's a tax bill sitting in the conference committee. We go into session March 8th, and Representative Jennifer Loon does have a provision in that tax bill that does relate to some tax credits for children in child care. So we'll see where that ends up.
And I love what I do, every day it's an exciting, wonderful day to be in. If you've never come to a home daycare, you need to go and see what it takes to keep 10 little tights busy, dry, clean, floor clean, food made, etc., etc., etc. And it is more and more people are choosing to get out of it. And we need to find ways to encourage more people. Because I get calls weekly. My waiting list, the next time I have an opening, is March 17th. I have to tell people know every single week.
Does anybody have any questions?
I think I did.
Well, we're not going to take questions from the crowd, but thank you. Okay, thank you. Okay, who is wanting to come up next? Let's see if anybody, yep. Mm-hmm. And nobody's jumping up for joy, so come on right back up there. Oh, hold on, somebody. Yep, okay, come on. No, that's okay. Yep. Thank you.
My name is Brenda Novak. I have been in the childcare business for 20 years.
And you live where?
I live in Waterville, which is Lucero County.
Okay, thank you.
I have worked both in-home and center-based. I opened my first in-home daycare when my oldest child was 5. She's now 23. I worked that daycare for about 7 years until the economy kind of took a dive. And then I took a job, went back to school, got a degree in child development, and I worked at the center then for 8 years until the economy then went down and the center in Waterville closed. I was lucky, took the 8 families that were left, asked them if they would wait 2 months for me to get licensed, and they followed me. I've been running Little Wonders Daycare in Waterville for 6 years now. Over all those years, all the 20 years, I've seen a lot come and go. A lot of the paperwork has changed. I see a lot of good things happening with the where and where and having child care providers. If you choose to go through that process to show that you do curriculum and show that you do preschool program, which I do, I am a two-star. I am going for my two-star. The one thing that struggles me with the four-year all-day pre is why are we jumping through those hoops if you're not going to let us do that job? That, and I see our small district struggling, and there's no room in our little district to put all-day four-year-olds. I see kindergartners in closets doing special ed, so I cannot see where the Waterville is going to put all day for your own free. The other issue I have with that is the busing. I do have some kids who do special ed, and the busing situation is horrible. And I know that's a district thing, but I have an issue when you have three-year-olds being dropped off at a curb, and they're in special ed. So that means I need to take all of my kids and watch in the window or watch outside the door for these kids to get off the bus. And the bus comes at noon. When do you have your kids?
Lunch and then noon.
Mm-hmm. I lunch kids at 11. I have to have kids down.
And bedtime.
Yeah. I have kids come to my door at 5 in the morning. So then we're waiting for the bus to come at noon. That's a little sad. The union, she already touched base with that. And I agree with everything you have to say about that. I haven't had one person tell me an honest thing yet about it. So I'm going to go there. And the paperwork, yeah, it's getting more and more and more. I don't know how much more you're going to... I hand parents a packet, a whole packet, with Parentware stuff that they encourage us to hand out, plus the stuff the county hands and the state. I look at my parents and I say, I know this stuff. This isn't me. If it were me, I want immunizations, I want a phone number, I want to know how to contact you. I want to know a little bit of background about your child, but I don't need all this other stuff.
And your name again was?
Brenda.
Brenda, thank you.
Any questions?
I guess I'd ask a quick one.
Representative Bennett.
Yeah, thank you very much, Madam Chair. The parent paperwork, where is that directive? Is that part of parent aware? Is that, what's that coming from?
If you go through the parentware process, they ask you to provide parents with multicultural, bilingual, ask them about their background, if there's anything special that you want to, like holidays, whatever, if you choose to, that kind of thing. So I feel if I need to show parent where I'm doing this, then I need to give it to the parents.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it makes sense.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
So again, I'm Karen Hoffman from Travis Life. Just some comments about one of the things about mandatory preschool that we hear time and time again from providers and parents is, why does it have to be in public schools? Why can't it be in the place of my choice as a parent where I want my child to go for that preschool experience? It doesn't have to only be in the public schools. And Brenda's right. There's no room in the public schools in most communities, at least in the rural communities, to add 200 preschoolers. So if you're going to do it, make sure that the money is available to the parent to be able to go to the place of their choice for their child. Otherwise, it doesn't make any sense. The other is the union. What I hear from providers around is, I'm not going to join. I'm not going to do it. And I don't want the Minneapolis, Rochester areas to be able to control what I have, what I can able to serve. Our life is different here. I don't want, because they have more providers who can vote, because not all providers can vote, I don't want them to have the say in what happens in my community. So that's what I think. I also understand that there are some changes in the child care assistance paperwork coming down this summer that will probably make it a little easier for parents, especially in determination. I wonder if you can address that at all.
So that is coming down from the federal government. There's reauthorization of the child care block grant. And so DHS is putting together their wonderful packet on what that legislation is going to look like. So I'm going to defer to Jerry Kerber.
Well, I'm not an expert on that. But there will be some changes proposed. And some of the things are I might not get the wording correctly on this, but people will be qualified for a year. And so if somebody's on child care assistance and they have significant life changes, they get a job, their income goes up, things like that, they have been pre-approved for the full year. And there won't be as much discussion at the six-month mark about what they need to be anymore. That's about the extent of it, what I know about it. Child care assistance part. There will be some likely changes related to licensing. There probably will be some changes in the training requirements, but not a lot, I don't think. There will be some changes related to what's currently legal non-licensed. There's going to be a requirement that there's some additional oversight. But for family child care providers, that's not going to be as significant because counties are already doing some oversight of those. The bigger change is going to be in the center-like programs, before and after school programs, boys clubs, girls clubs, those kinds of activities that currently are exempt from licensure but are getting child care assistance funding. They're going to have to have overmanages that are coming out of the department. And then the other area that's going to change probably is that the background study function will be moved from counties to the state. And so one of the other things will happen, and this is not, I think it's been discussed for a number of years. But the background study has to be fingerprint-based, and it's going to be really a one-time background study, which is different than now. And so the state is what I mentioned at the beginning. One of my areas is the background study division of DHS and me. We do over 1,200 background studies a day, and we're converting over to a fingerprint-based system that will then be rolled out for family child care providers, too. And we have fingerprinting stations around the state, and the background studies are very fast. Sometimes they're done within hours if people don't have any kind of history. They get sort of snagged in their background study. But then that one background study is all they need because we have a continuous feed of new criminal history information and treatment information, so that regular repeat of the background study won't be necessary after this shift.
Do you know if there's a background study, fingerprinting here, locally?
I don't know, but there's one. The standard was that there has to be a fingerprint station within 40 miles of where anybody lives or works. And so there are over 50 of them throughout the state. It got to be a little more challenging, like you get up in the northwest corner of the state in the rural areas. But I'm sure there is one somewhere, but I'm not sure there is.
Yeah, so it was interesting that back background studies when they first came out. We had to fingerprint anybody who lived out of the county. And so we did that, we did fingerprinting, and they got sent back to us saying that we didn't do them right. So we had to go down to the police station, have the police do them, and that stuff. We applied to do a background study here at a fingerprint station, and the closest are literally an hour away, which means that I now have to send staff home, or I just have to take the kids and then go an hour away in order to get fingerprinting done, which is going to be a Monday through Friday, you know, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. thing, which is going to make it really difficult, I think, for providers. So, just think about it.
Well, thanks, Karen. We'll have to.
I would have to take the day off, and parents would have to go without daycare that day because of my hours to get somewhere like that.
Well, we'll be in discussion about that.
We'll be having more discussion about that. I think, you know, we're going to be proposing the change that will roll out over some time, and we want to make sure that, the fingerprint, the background study requirement should not impede your ability to job here. I mean, that's just illogical. And so, our hope is that there are evening and after hours and weekends hours for the fingerprint stations. A lot of this equipment right now is being placed in nursing homes or other types of facilities that we license at DHS. And they're finding they are the official fingerprint station for the area. But then there's a lot of companies that are buying it too. And in some cases, counties are buying it. And so that, the fingerprinting should be accessible. I should mention, too, you get your picture taken with the fingerprints. But so that equipment it should be accessible. And, been working a lot on that. We've been doing the pilot now for a year and a half, and we're rolling it out now to all of our DHS license programs. And so far, that has not been a bigger
I'm not a big fan of it, but that's another story.
If it's accessible,
yeah. Right. Thank you for bringing that up. So that's very important, because a lot of times you can't take that day off of work. It impedes on that family, and they're in a rut. So anybody would else like to come up? No? Okay.
My name is Dan Buck, and I'm the executive director at Kids Branch here at Fort Thomas. We are Parent Air Force Star rated. We are nationally accredited. We're licensed for 260 kids. We're currently serving capacity. Very similar to what Ms. Hoffman said earlier, we turn away probably 4 or 5 families a week. 4 years ago, we entered a collaboration with Hero Town Public Schools, where what we're doing is offering early childhood special ed, so the ECSE kids are brought to us, so we are actually serving an additional 48 kids, all within our license. So there's some good news in child care in that respect. I don't want to minimize some of the comments that were made, and it's not directed to anybody, but I think we have to have a business approach for our businesses, whether it's in-home or whether it's center. We have found a lot of good resources for training, and we're able to do our training in-house. I have 55 employees. I get them all trained every year at minimal cost. I've gone forward to become a first aid CPR certified trainer myself. So we do some of that training on site. We've got some resources out of other states that are DHS approved for training that you can purchase them, and it costs minimal fee, maybe $12 per employee per year. And it's something that they can do on their own. So there's things that are positive out there. I think what I would like to see, and I don't know if this is really going to address the purpose of your meeting, but I see a gap in our relationship with our employers, with our family physicians, in our families as far as when it comes to being educated and what to look for. We have children who are being sent home due to illness that's mandated by DHS, and I have doctors who are signing the off that says you can return to daycare immediately. And according to the Department of Health, no, they cannot. So then I have to get the Department of Health involved, and they're calling the Owatonna Clinic and saying, you need to test for this, or this is the exclusion. So there happens to be a disparity or a gap in that, as far as that respect. Families also don't know what to look for. Being parents aware of 4-star rating, what we find is that families really don't know the difference. They hear the title, they think it's great, they see the poster, they see the literature, but if you're to ask them what does it mean, they don't have a clue. Just because we do a good job each and every day, just like any other program does. And I think that stipend that you guys are allowing, or the state of Minnesota is allowing for our families, our programs to receive on behalf of the families, there could be a little bit more of an educational component there to reach out if that family is receiving a service from a program such as mine. Maybe one mailing a year that would just say, understand you're receiving this service, these are the dollars, this is what these dollars do for you, so they understand what is there. One of the things as a business that's kind of frustrating is if I have a family, in our program we have a rate difference. Depending on the age, they're all different, but it can be anywhere from a couple bucks a week up to, I think, at the highest is $8 a week. If a family pays their co-payments and their co-payment is $2 but they don't pay their rate difference, I'm stuck with the bill. And that's really disheartening. So I think there should be a tag on there that says if you don't sell your account, because what's happening is these daycare providers, these providers or kids, families are going from provider to provider, and then it's unjust to us as providers. These people are going around and they're basically building a debt with each provider, and then they're skipping out and they go to the next provider. And it's a means of our society that is uncomfortable to talk about, but they're creating a debt that they have no intention to pay for. And our laws are set forth that there's not a whole lot that you can do. If I walked out of my local grocery store pushing a grocery cart, I'd be arrested on the spot. But a person who receives a service, such as mine, who walks out with a debt, there's no penalty. And yeah, I've been taken to conciliation court, but as Philomena said a minute ago, I can't close down. I mean, I have the luxury because I'm the director. But in her case, she wouldn't be able to leave her business for the day to attend court to go collect the debt. So that's something we might want to consider looking at. I'd encourage more visits from our licensor. I take it as a compliment when they don't come to visit me. But at the same time, there's a lot of things happening in our community that I need a big brother to look after. So I would encourage more resources as far as being able to get our licensors in the field, unannounced visits. I mean, I remember the day, I've been doing it for 27 years now, 25 in Owatonna, and I remember the day the first unlicensed visit or unannounced visit came out, and I was just shaking in my boots. And now it's just, I see them at licensing time, and that's it. You know, and again, I take it as a compliment, but there's programs that could probably use more repeat visits. I don't know if any of our Steele County workers are here, but our Mid Prairie Alliance between Steele, Waseca, and Dodge is horrendous, and I'm not going to take your time. If you want to talk to me about that later, you can. I just got paid early last week, so last Tuesday, for care that I provided back in September. So we have a huge gap in Steele County. I've talked to them about it. I did talk to one parent last week. She said that she was told that they're working on the December 15th applications right now. We're at February 24th. So we have that alliance isn't going very well. So if you want to know more, ask me questions, but I don't want to spew a bunch of hard feelings over that one. I'd gladly talk. One thing though, in the program size that we are serving 260 kids. I get an application from Maurer County, Dodge County, Remore County, Rice County, Steele County, et cetera, et cetera. I've served probably 14 or 15 counties in the state. I get an application renewal every year from every county. It's the same one. I should foolishly mean just maybe make a photocopy of the first one I receive and then just send out. If there's a way we could streamline that, an online application, maybe directly to the state, one-time shot. You know, are you licensed in more than one, or serve families from more than one county? If I check yes, maybe I can do this online or something like that. So,
that's the CK.
Right, yeah. I think that's about all I had for notes. You know, we carry a passion. That's a common theme. You go through the state, you're going to find that these people are doing it not for the money. Yeah, it'd be nice to make, you know, we do make livings. I do make a decent living. But for a nonprofit organization, so everything I put into this business, I will walk away with memories. That's it. And I'm okay with that. That was my choice. But I think what has to happen is we just need to make sure that we're covering our bases, protecting the businesses as far as collection of debts, streamlining it so you're not burdening us with too much paperwork, and educating our families so they understand the importance of early child education. We're barred with 1,000 trillion brain synapses. If we don't tap into that gray matter by the time we're 10 years of age, we lose that capacity for the rest of our life. People don't understand that. Our educators in the school district don't quite understand that, because they're running at 30, 35 kids per classroom. Very similar to the lady from Waterville, Ms. Novak. It's, you know, Ortona is maxed with classroom space. You bring in four-year-olds, I don't see it happening. Give me the opportunity. I'm four-star rated. You created that entity for a purpose. Let me use it. Let me show you I can do it better, if not as good as the school district. Questions for me? Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. Thanks for your passion. Mr. Kerber.
I'm Gary Kerber again from DHS. One thing I didn't mention about the new federal requirements is that we are going to be required to do site visits once a year, unannounced site visits every year. And that goes with family child care providers are going to be required to get an annual visit from the county, and child care centers will get an annual visit from the state. That's the requirement. Obviously, we'll be making a budgetary request from the legislature for the visit to do that.
Obviously. Another FTE or so, right, Jerry?
Madam Chair.
Ms. Representative Kreisha.
If I could have a question for Mr. Buck, right?
Yep.
I'm just curious, how many years did you say you've been doing this?
27.
In those 27 years, has the increased state regulations and federal regulations made you a better provider or just given you more onus work?
If you could come up to the record.
And if you want to keep here.
I think if you were to ask for change, each one of us would say, yuck, I don't want change. But I look at regulations as good change, and I embrace it, and I feel that's what accreditation and parent aware and the state have done to me, has made me a better provider. So I embrace it, I welcome it, and I encourage it. And I know there's a lot of people who have done it for same amount of time as I have, or even longer, who would give you the opposite opinion. They would say, why are you dabbling in my business? Whether it's in a home, small center, or large center. And I think what we have to do is, and I'm not for big government, but this is one of those areas where I think government has to step forth and be a voice for these kids. We want to make sure that there's a regulation in place so families understand it. A true story I can tell you real quickly is I have a family right now who special diet need statement was given to me. No whole milk, no yogurt, no cheese. So we sat their child down the other day and we were going to have a chocolate chip cookie. We And Grandma chewed us out. You cannot do the chocolate chip cookie. And I'm like, why not? And she says, because it's a milk chocolate chip in there. I said, the diet statement says no whole milk, no yogurt, no cheese. Well, in that cookie is milk chocolate chips. So the Department of Health or CACFP called us and said, we got a report from the family, what's going on? I have to file that special diet statement to the team. No whole milk, no yogurt, no cheese, regardless of what the family says. And I think that's where we as a government and as a state are headed in some respects is the regulations aren't put out there just because you guys have nothing else to do and say better to do in St. Paul. We're doing it so we get better kids in the long run. We could all raise our children in our own respects, and I have a certain respect for that that I admire, but we also have to look out for the overall health of these children. I have a staff person who literally, and I'm getting off the subject a touch, but she gets punched by her boyfriend. And she asked my wife yesterday, she goes, how often did your husband hit you? And my wife's like, what? And she goes, I never hit by my husband. And she goes, well, I get hit by my boyfriend every day. Where I'm going with this, my point is people will live in what's acceptable to their environment. If you let kids be served chicken noodle soup and grilled cheese sandwiches all the time without a federal food program, it'd be permissible. So I think the extra regulations are good and a good thing, and I welcome it and embrace it. It's made me a better provider. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone from the crowd have want to come up and talk? Okay, come on up. Have a seat, state your name and your area.
My name is
Jane
Payton, and I'm the Executive Director for Three Rivers Indiana. And I have two next steps that we have to raise money. One is in Fort Hill, and I also have an affiliated and then I also have a really good collaborative program at two daycare centers in Brooklyn, which is I Get Daycare and then Child for Life. I'm also part of the Kids Can't Wait Coalition from the Minnesota Metro Center. And I just kind of wanted to give you a little bit of a briefing about the state of very accessible child care in Minnesota and give you a little bit different perspective. According to Child Care Aware of America, Minnesota has among the highest child care costs in the nation. Even for families earning our annual median income, which is $73,900, the average cost of child care for one infant at a child care center is nearly $14,000 a year. It's 19% of the household income if you're just making the median. If you're a low-income family, the cost of care can easily consume more than half of your entire income. So this leaves real room to meet other essential needs like food and housing and transportation. When care isn't affordable or accessible, children may be placed in a patchwork of child care arrangements. Parents may not be able to get to work, families may experience greater economic hardship, and businesses may struggle to grow or even to find the employees that they need. So we are asking in this budget session to increase funding for the basic sliding fee child care assistance program so that eligible families will be able to take part in it. Right now we have 6,500 families on the waiting list. I think it's been since 2008 where it's been fully funded. Since the year 2010, that funding has gone down every year. And we're at the all-time low right now. It just went up a little bit because of the extra funding in the last session, but there's still 6,500 families on the wait list. We'd like to increase the reimbursement rate for child care providers participating in CCAP so more families can afford affordable child care. I think what I'm hearing and what I'm seeing for families that even come into Head Start is that they're receiving their wage through CCAP and it's not, the child care centers are charging more than that. And so they're either turning them away, so they have to go run around trying to find another one, or they're asking them to pay the difference. So I don't know when the last study was done on the medium or, you know, for what more childcare providers charge and if it needs to be redone again. It's grossly underfunded right now. So we'd also like to improve the state's child independent care tax credit to help more low and moderate income families afford the high cost of childcare. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Yes, I actually carried the increase to the CCAP funding bill last session. So, but the CCAP bill, the Child Care Assistance Program, is a temporary band-aid. Currently, we don't have enough providers even to take those child care assistance children. So we really need to get to the root of why we don't have providers in the state of Minnesota as well. I mean, you can fully fund it. To fully fund the program, Kids Can't Wait is asking for close to, if not over, $500 million for the biennium. And we can't, as a state, sustain that kind of spending. But it certainly is a bill that I know is being put together. I will not be carrying that bill this session. And I'm not sure who will be carrying that bill. It's way too costly, and I'm not comfortable carrying such a dollar amount. But we are cognizant of what you're saying and respect what you are asking for. But the reality, the fiscal reality of the state of Minnesota is $500 million is a lot of money, and we just currently don't have that to ask the taxpayers to foot that bill right now. So, but thank you. Anybody else? Yes, thank you.
Hi there, my name is Trina Burson. I am a school social worker in Oklahoma. I work with early childhood special education. So, this age gap that we're talking about. And so right now, today, I really want to talk about accessibility to childcare for families. You know, that is one of our biggest struggles. In Oklahoma, we do have a large amount of, especially in home childcare providers, but the majority of people will provide childcare till 4 p.m. or 4:30 or 5 p.m. And the reality is that people making decisions about childcare, they're middle class people, they work, you know, the 9-to-5 type jobs. And really what we're seeing is we have second shift workers who don't have anybody to care for their children. We have, you know, second shift workers who might be lucky enough to get childcare, but they don't have anybody to care for their kids while they sleep in the morning the next day. You know, we're really seeing a struggle there, and like we said earlier, we're seeing people who have friends foster kids, and these kids are being raised by TVs, or they're just being, you know, running around the house. And we talk a lot about what parents qualify for and what parents deserve, but really, I mean, we need to look at the kids. The kids are the ones who deserve these things. You know, nobody can say that this three-year-old deserves more than the other three-year-old. You know, no matter if the parent is somebody who is low income or who has a criminal history or who has addiction problems, you know, their kids still should qualify for the same things. They have a right to have consistent care, not to have to hop around from childcare to childcare. They have the right to obtain those pre-academic skills, because we know when they go to kindergarten, it's tough. I mean, we expect a lot of kids nowadays, and the majority of our kids aren't coming prepared. And so I think we really need to take a look at how are we helping those families that don't fit into that middle class 9-to-5. You know, how are we helping those families, you know, parents are job hopping even. They'll work somewhere for 2 weeks, not work for a month, work somewhere for 2 weeks. Does that kid not deserve consistent care? You know, that's something that we need to ask ourselves. Who are we hearing from, the parents or the kids?
Well, Trina, maybe you want to open up a child care center in the evening.
If there's money.
Well. Who is, yes, please come on up. So you came in a little late, so just state your name for the record, where you live, and yeah, thank you.
My name is Fatima Hussein. I live in Fairmont. I'm the director of High Daycare Learning Center here in Fairmont. We are also a test partner, and we are working out for the start of as well as we are getting our national implementation. We have 124 capacity, and we are full of food. We operate two shifts. First shift, we are open from 6 a.m. to 10:30 p.m. So we have second shift. There's a lot of meeting area for the second shift.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that I would like to tell you about is the funding. I mean, our way is so low to compare to a way that a lot of parents end up having debt when they can't pay, and we have to end their care. That's one reason, one reason that you see a lot of centers might not accept child care assistance or are making sure that the parents have a deposit or some other type of means to make sure that they cover those differences. Because always, always people are higher than the county. And parents might be able to pay their co-pays, but the difference is still there. They have to pay, and a lot of times they are not able to pay. So I would recommend that if the state have a little extra surplus in our budget to see that area with a lot of parents in the pay. That is one thing that I would recommend. The second thing is outsourcing the child care program. Some of the Western County, I think, was the first, first to do the child care program. That seemed to run a lot efficiently, so that you don't have a lot of backlog or a lot of kids in the process for so long. I think Steel County also uses, Steel County Employment Services for special employment program. And we used to sit down to the same to the county. But it's outside agents, so they want the program for the county. So those agents tend to be very efficient in terms of making sure that this person gets approved pretty quickly. So a lot of times, parents might find a job, can't want to start the job in their labor program and the job search program. They can't start the job because their job process is not ready. So in Vice County, we don't have these agents, so I would recommend that there's anybody from our county to think about that, and maybe also that to children's first, families first, to run that program for them. So a lot of times, we do have another center in another town as well, and a lot of times, the person is in the program, you get a call from the employment services, and they say, yep, when this parent started today or yesterday, let me get a call to try it. In Rice County, unfortunately, it takes to see public counseling. Sometimes parents might have everything turned into like kind of free certification, and they're not fast enough to work on the case before the case is closed, and we have to end their care. I think we do have one family here that we end their care recently because of the county is behind on that case, and we cannot provide service unless we have vouchers for parents paying. And when parents can't afford to pay, they have to stay home, and that way they have to now lose their job and they have to go back to cash assistance, which it's not what we want. We want people out of the cash assistance program and go be working. So I would recommend having a cash system on how to make sure that people get the thing they need to do and pretty fast, like to have that outside agents or especially the English program people have working with those agents so that they have to pay for them. That is working with them when they have a job or something that they can call. If we get a call from a caseworker and say, hey, they're good to go, we are working, we will see some vouchers pretty soon, we usually, accept them and let them start. But other than that, we cannot let them out unless we have vouchers or ways that we don't know that we're getting peace. We can start. So I would recommend that. I would recommend the county can work to match at least a better way the encouragement to match the way the center is charging so that parents don't end up losing or owing a lot of debt on that end. So I think those two things would be the things I would talk about.
This is Mr. Hussein, correct? So this question is directed to you, but also to other providers out there in the area that are having issues with recertifications or receiving the reimbursement in a timely manner from the county. Have you spoken to your county commissioners about this issue and seeing if they can...
In our county, especially in Vice County, the processing part is the difficult part. Once we have vouchers, when we submit the vouchers, we usually get the payment right away. We have no problem on that account kind of part. But the processing part, that's, I mean, it's really, really, I mean, padlock. I don't know how much they are behind, but they're pretty behind. We talked to, I think I did talk to one time before, Michelle, she's the supervisor of the financial workers, but I mean, I think she, I mean, listened to us, but nothing she can do about it. I think that as far as they don't have enough people there, or enough money to hire more case workers to work on the cases, there might be few financial workers working on so much case, anything in time, so they are not able to be up to the speed of the testing they have. So I think I would recommend also my county to be allocating more funds to hire more financial workers so that they can process very faster. That's one thing, we don't have enough people to process caseload we have. So, but we have, I've never spoke to the county commissioner. Or,
thank you. Well, we have this, come on up. No worries, bring them all up. Hello, children.
I don't know, I've never done this before.
Nope, just take the mic, state your name for the record. And
my name is Stephanie Brennan, and I'm here. I work two jobs, I make $7,800 a month. I see my kid working by the end of the month, like the ass.
He's just
like, he was saying, every other month, I'm losing my money because the county has not processed money. Like this month, I had to take a little work, my third job in 3 years. Because every other month, it's constant. Just submit it in, then the process. And that was my last denial of all the last baker numerous times. Like right now, I'm a stay at home. I'm again, and I'm not wanting to be a stay at home mom. I mean, I'm trying to get out there and work two jobs. I'm trying to succeed.
No, I understand. I totally empathize. Your children are stunning. Very well behaved children. You're doing a great job. I would say, you know, that's very frustrating. I'm very sorry you've lost your job. I can tell the passion in your voice that you want to do what's right for your family, and that this is very painful for you to lose a job over paperwork. I'm not sure what is going on in your county. I'm sure, what's that? It's Rice County. Well, who represents Rice County? Anybody here at this table? Right, okay, well, maybe Brian can get on the phone with Social Services this week and contact the director and find out what's going on. But I would also suggest when you are needing your paper recertified, even now, I would reach out to your state representative and say, you know what, this is do or die. I mean, we have people contacting us all the time for situations like this, and he can get on the phone and contact your county worker and say, listen here, you need to help her out because she's going to lose her job, and we need to push her to the front of the line, okay?
Well, I lost my paper for about 4 months, so I had no choice. I had one cashier's business because they weren't coming to me, scanning the paperwork correctly. I don't know,
my boss wrote the same thing three times with just different words because it helps me know. My boss didn't know she can get approximately this many hours before I got the match. And then it varies this many hours when I got the match. They want to get a specific amount of hours, and there's no job out there that can give you that.
Not currently.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's just hard. I mean, there's days where I have to take out both the SPHC chronic ones, so I'm always up with children, and then the one that just walked away is these chronic SPHC. So my hours doesn't exactly, you know, I'm pretty short because one thing that pays for the other thing, they just like totally come in. And then all of a sudden, you're like, well, thanks, I'm not. Well, I don't know what else to do. I mean, you just go on, you're raising three kids, and you're trying to make it.
Mm-hmm. So possibly the job loss is due to missing too much work as well? No? Okay. Okay. Okay.
And all of a sudden, I got a letter stating that it's canceled, so I come to work for state. She kind of got this contact. The supervisor, the worker, I'm not sure exactly the name, but she came to my worker and she said that we haven't gotten to the end of February yet to process. So that doesn't really help me because I couldn't get to work in that time, like, I just go to them, but.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I can't promise anything, but I know that Representative Daniels will, if you want him to, you can take his business card and you two can be in contact after this hearing, okay? Okay, you're welcome. Thank you. Well, that is your business decision. It sounds like you have a really big heart, so thank you very much. Who else would like to come up? No one else would like to say anything? Well, members, do you have anything to add?
No, I mean, I think if, Madam Chair, we could always move to adjourn and then just take questions as
sure.
People have them.
Yeah.
Take them one-on-one, maybe just make private conversations.
Okay. Then I move to adjourn this meeting. All right. Okay.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you.